He was a powerful politician with a perfect life, until he met me. I wasn't looking for love. I was hunting for justice, and he handed me the match that burned his world down. One night, one camera, one orgasm on record. I seduced him, controlled him, and then exposed him, live in front of the world. This isn't just a story about sex or scandal. It's about a woman who used her body like a weapon and turned a senator's career into ashes. Welcome to her body, his ruin, where seduction isn't pleasure, it's punishment. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Her Body, His Ruin. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Setup. He thought I was a fantasy. He was right, until I became his nightmare. The dress I chose wasn't just an outfit, it was armor. Black velvet, off-shoulder, slitted up to the hip like a whisper of sin. It hugged every inch of my body like it had been sewn on by the devil himself. I didn't walk into that gala hoping to blend in. I walked in to be seen, to be devoured, to be remembered. My heels clicked against the marble floors, echoing louder than they should have. The kind of echo that draws attention. Every step was deliberate, poised, balanced between grace and danger. I could feel the eyes, the lingering stares. Men mostly. Women too, but theirs were sharper, measuring, judging. I didn't give a fuck. The truth is, people like me don't get invited to events like these. At least not by name. I wasn't on the guest list. But I was expected. Not officially, not consciously, but deep down, every man in that room had carved out a corner of his fantasy for a woman like me. I just gave her a name, a body, a purpose. The gala was everything I hated about politics. Elegant, hollow, pretentious. Crystal chandeliers dripped like diamonds from the ceiling, casting golden light over men in tuxedos and women wrapped in fabric that cost more than most people's rent. Waiters moved like ghosts, silent and robotic, refilling glasses with champagne none of these motherfuckers could pronounce correctly. I stood at the edge of the room for a while, watching the charade. Everyone pretending to give a damn about policy, reform, progress. But they weren't here for any of that. They were here to be seen, to whisper deals in corners, to fuck each other without ever touching. The politics was just foreplay. Then I saw him, Senator Julian fucking Cross. Even in a room full of masks, he stood out. Not because of charisma, or presence, or some fake-ass charm. It was the way power clung to him. The way it dripped off his posture, his voice, his fucking smile. He wasn't trying to be liked. He expected it, demanded it. And most people gave in because they couldn't afford not to. He was taller than I expected. Broad shoulders beneath a perfectly tailored suit, tie knotted with surgical precision, face clean-shaven but not soft. His silver hair gave him that distinguished, trustworthy politician look, the kind that made desperate housewives fantasize about him behind their husbands' backs. But it was his eyes that gave him away. Ice blue, calculated, hungry. I didn't approach him. That would have been too easy, too expected. Instead, I let him see me. Just a glimpse at first, my reflection in a mirror behind the bar. A tilt of my neck, the flash of my thigh as I crossed one leg over the other. I laughed at nothing, whispered something into the bartender's ear, created curiosity. He took the bait in less than 3 minutes. I felt him behind me before he spoke. That presence men like him carry, thick with entitlement. The way the air shifts when someone who's used to being obeyed walks into your space. "Are you enjoying the evening?" he asked, his voice dipped in velvet and sin. I didn't turn around right away. I let his words linger like perfume on bare skin. Then I turned, slowly, letting my eyes climb up from his chest to his mouth to those icy eyes. "Not yet," I said, my voice soft, almost bored. "But the night is still young." He smiled, not with amusement, but curiosity. I could tell I didn't fit into any box he knew how to label. And that irritated him. Men like Julian don't like puzzles they can't solve in under 5 minutes. That's where the fun begins. "I'm Julian," he offered, extending a hand. I looked at it but didn't take it. Instead, I leaned in just slightly, lips parted, breath warm. "I know who you are." I watched the flicker in his eyes. Intrigue, slight caution, then confidence reasserting itself. Of course I knew who he was. Every damn person in that ballroom did. Senator Julian Cross, family values, Christian morals, conservative gold star politician with just enough liberal smirking charm to appeal across the aisle. But I wasn't one of his followers. I wasn't there to be impressed. I was there to ruin him. "What's your name?" he asked, tilting his head. I smiled. "Names are overrated. You can call me anything you want later. Abit." The tension stretched between us like the strap of a silk bra about to snap. He laughed softly. Not nervous. Not predatory. Just entertained. He thought he was the one in control. That's how I knew I was already winning. We talked. Or rather, he talked. About policy. Education reform. Real change. I nodded, asked the right questions, laughed at the right moments. He couldn't shut up. Men like him fall in love with their own voices. I touched his arm once. Just once. A light graze as I laughed at one of his bullshit jokes. His pupils dilated. His hand brushed the back of mine, like he couldn't help it, like his body was already betraying his image. And across the room, his wife stood like a goddamn porcelain statue. Perfect hair. Diamond necklace. Expression so frozen it might have been painted on. She didn't look at him. She didn't need to. That's what makes these marriages last, willful blindness. Eventually, he leaned in closer. Are you here with someone? He asked, voice lower now. Intimate, like a secret. I let the silence linger before I responded. Not someone that matters. That was it. The crack in the foundation. By the time the event ended, he'd brushed his fingers down my spine under the guise of escorting me to the valet. I didn't flinch. I didn't lean in. I just smiled like I knew everything he was going to do before he did it. As I turned to leave, he pressed a card into my palm. Black. Unmarked. Just a number. You should call, he said, barely above a whisper. I leaned in, lips near his ear. Only if you want trouble. And then I walked away. I didn't call. Of course not. I texted. You don't want me in your office. You want me on your lap. 3 minutes. That's how long it took for him to respond. Men in power are impatient. They're used to getting what they want now. His reply was simple. An address. Downtown. Condo. Discreet. No name. No words. Just coordinates to his undoing. I put on red lipstick, packed the tiny audio device in my clutch, and made sure the hidden camera in my necklace was charged. This wasn't just going to be a scandal. This was going to be a fucking masterpiece. Because while he thought he was setting up a rendezvous with a beautiful stranger, what he was really doing was handing me the keys to his own destruction. Chapter 2, The Bait. I showed up late on purpose. That's the kind of shit men like Julian can't handle. The waiting. The not knowing. The unraveling of control in real time. It's not about time, it's about power. Every minute I made him wait was a minute I pulled the strings tighter. His condo was perched in the sky like a secret the city wasn't supposed to know about. A top-floor penthouse overlooking the lights of a place he pretended to care about, low-income housing down below, flashing red lights of ambulances he cut funding for, streets filled with people whose lives he stepped on to climb the ladder. I wore a coat over the dress, long black and sleek like a blade. The elevator had no buttons, just a keycard panel. Security that screamed, "I have something to hide." The concierge gave me a knowing look when I stepped inside. I could have destroyed him too, just with a smile. But I didn't come for scraps. I came for the big kill. The elevator opened to soft jazz humming through the air, and the smell of money. Not new money, old money. The kind that sits in dark mahogany and pours itself expensive whiskey, like it's entitled to silence. Julian stood in front of floor-to-ceiling windows, hands in his pockets, suit jacket unbuttoned, like he was trying to look casual, but couldn't quite remember how. He turned when he heard my heels, and for a moment he just stared, like I was a mirage. You came, he said, voice low, thick with something he didn't know how to name. I always come when I'm not supposed to, I replied, shrugging off the coat and draping it over the arm of a chair. His eyes dropped. Of course they did. The dress clung to me like it was trying to escape. Red. Tight. Dangerous. He moved toward me slowly, like a man approaching a wild animal he wants to tame, but also secretly wants to be devoured by. I wasn't sure you would, he said. I wasn't sure you could handle it. He laughed. Nervous now. Just a little. The confidence was still there, but it was starting to tremble around the edges. He motioned toward a glass of wine already poured. I walked past it. I don't drink unless I poured it myself. His lips parted, surprised. Good. Let him start wondering. Let the paranoia crawl in. A man like him is used to being trusted. Worshipped. I wasn't here for that. We sat. He on the couch, legs spread, trying to take up space. Me in the chair opposite him, legs crossed, back straight. I watched him try to figure out how to approach me. Like there were steps he'd memorized, Seduction for Dummies, Senator edition. I let the silence build. He cleared his throat. So, what do you do? I destroy things, I said. Beautifully. That threw him. His brows raised, but his mouth curved like he liked the challenge. He leaned forward. Do you always speak in riddles? No. Only when I'm trying to make a man forget how much he's about to lose. He sat back again, lips twitching, unsure if I was joking. I wasn't. The wine stayed untouched. The room got hotter. Or maybe it was just us. Two animals pretending to be civilized while circling the kill. He loosened his tie, and that's when I moved. Slowly, I uncrossed my legs and stood. His eyes followed me like they were magnetized to the rhythm of my hips. I walked to the window, staring out at the city. Do you know what this view says? I asked. He stood too, coming up behind me. What does it say? That you think you're above it all. That the world exists to look up at you. But the funny thing about towers, I turned to face him, is they fall. He was close now, closer than he should have been. His hand brushed against my waist like it was testing a wire for voltage. I didn't flinch. I didn't move. You're dangerous, he whispered. I tilted my head, voice soft and sharp. No, Julian. I'm necessary. And then I kissed him. Hard. Fast. Like fire on gasoline. He kissed me back like a starving man, hands grabbing, mouth desperate, body betraying every ounce of polished control he'd ever had. I let it happen. Let him press me against the glass. Let him think he was leading, dominating, seducing. But the camera was already rolling, hidden in the necklace resting just above my breasts. Audio device tucked between the silk and lace of my thigh. Motion-triggered backup recording in the clutch. A professional setup designed to catch every lie, every moan, every fucking groan of surrender. Because this wasn't just about sex. This was about leverage. He picked me up like a man who needed to prove something and carried me to the bedroom. The light stayed on. His phone buzzed once. He ignored it. His wife probably wondering where he was. His assistant, maybe. None of it mattered now. The clothes came off fast, messy, frantic. He was beautiful in a way. Not physically, but in the way a crumbling empire looks beautiful seconds before it collapses. I let him kiss me, touch me, worship me like I was his salvation. And right before he slid inside me, I whispered into his ear. Do you trust me? He paused. Just a beat. Yes, he breathed. I smiled. That's your first mistake. We moved like a storm, loud, wet, consuming. His body writhed with the tension of a man used to being in control, but secretly aching to lose it. He said my name like a prayer he didn't know the meaning of. And when he came, it was with a gasp of my name and a promise he didn't realize he'd made. The camera caught it all. Every second. Every grunt. Every fucked up sound of pleasure wrapped in political ruin. When it was over, he lay back, chest heaving, sweat clinging to his skin like guilt. I rose from the bed slowly, slipped back into my dress. He watched me like a man who had just survived a natural disaster, but didn't know the aftershocks were still coming. You're leaving? He asked, voice hoarse. I already got what I came for, I said, turning to him with a satisfied smirk. He sat up, confusion etched on his face. I thought. I know what you thought. I walked to the door, grabbing my clutch. But this wasn't about what you thought. He stood, something dawning in his expression. Wait, don't worry, I said, voice sweet as arsenic. You'll remember me, real soon. And then I was gone, down the elevator, out the doors into the night, wind cold against my bare skin, heart steady, purpose intact. In my hands was the beginning of his end, and all I had to do now was press upload. Chapter 3, upload pending. I didn't rush home. That would have made it feel like guilt. Instead, I walked 3 extra blocks through the biting night air, heels striking pavement like war drums. My skin still tingled with the heat of his touch, but it wasn't lust lingering on my body, it was evidence. A living imprint of power exchanged. Faked intimacy. A performance. I'd fucked him like a woman who worshipped his existence, and he'd come like a man whose sins had just been forgiven. But forgiveness wasn't on the menu. Not tonight. Not ever. The city was quiet in the way it always is at that hour, where every corner feels like a confession and every streetlight buzzes like it knows something you don't. Neon signs flickered on cracked windows. Homeless men curled under thin blankets near locked storefronts. The contrast was jarring, cruel. Julian's penthouse was only 15 stories above this mess, and yet it was another world entirely. The predator in him had mistaken the prey in me, and that's where the fucking magic lived. I reached my apartment at exactly 2:17 a.m. Not fancy, not poor. Just quiet. Hidden. Anonymous. The kind of place where neighbors minded their business, and the landlord didn't ask questions as long as the rent hit early. Inside, the silence wrapped around me like an old lover. Familiar, comforting, dangerous. I peeled off the dress slowly, letting the weight of the night fall to the floor. My body moved on instinct, lace unhooked, heels kicked off, hair unpinned, until I was standing in front of the mirror bare and bruised with purpose. I looked at myself, really looked. There was no shame in what I did. No guilt. But there was something else. A hum beneath my skin. A heartbeat that didn't quite slow down. I was wired. Not from the sex. From the game. I plugged the necklace into my laptop and transferred the footage. The screen lit up in grainy black and white, and there he was. Senator Julian Cross. Glorious. Vulnerable. Naked in every fucking way that mattered. The audio was even better. The breathless whispers. The gasps. The unmistakable sound of power crumbling under the weight of lust. He said my name. Again and again. Like a chant. Like an offering. I leaned back in my chair and let it play. I trust you. You're different. Don't stop. Please don't stop. Click. Pause. That last one. That's the soundbite. The one that would play on every major news network when this hit. A man begging. Desperate. Soft. Not a predator. Not a leader. Just a man in ruins. I cut it. Trimmed it. Cleaned the audio. Isolated the shot where his wedding band catches the light as he grips my hip. Added slow zoom for effect. Not that I needed to edit much. The footage was already perfect. I had three copies, cloud, external drive, and a hard copy burned to disk in a fireproof box. Because blackmail is an art, and insurance is non-negotiable. But here's the thing. I didn't want money. I didn't want a payout or hush cash under the table. I wanted his name in flames. I wanted headlines. Meltdown. A legacy snapped in half and broadcast to the world. Because Julian Cross didn't just fuck a stranger. He fucked me. And I am not just a stranger. I am the consequence. You might think I was some random woman who decided to destroy a man for sport. You'd be wrong. This shit was personal. Years ago, my mother was a staffer in a senator's office. Not Julian's. His mentor. The one who taught him how to speak with charm and strike with cruelty. She worked her ass off, believed in politics, in democracy, in something bigger than herself. Until she came home one night, quiet, broken, reeking of shame, and locked herself in the bathroom for 6 hours. She never told me what he did. She didn't have to. 3 months later, she swallowed a bottle of sleeping pills and left behind nothing but a note. He said no one would believe me. And he was right. No one did. Not the press. Not the party. Not even her closest friends. Because that's what power does. It silences. It deletes. It rewrites the truth until you can't recognize yourself in the mirror anymore. Julian inherited his seat when that bastard retired. And he inherited me the moment he touched my arm at that gala. This wasn't seduction. This was strategy. My body was a weapon, yes. But my mind was the fucking blade. I stared at the screen as his orgasm shook his body, and all I felt was resolve. No regret. No second thoughts. Just clarity. This wasn't revenge. It was justice. The kind that didn't wear robes or give out verdicts. The kind that bleeds. Screams. Burns. The phone buzzed. Blocked number. I didn't answer. Voicemail came through. His voice. Sleepy. Breathless. Hey, I just wanted to say tonight was, wow. I don't even have words. You're something else. I haven't felt like that in, Christ, in years. I know this isn't just sex. Not with you. Call me tomorrow, okay? Please. I played it twice. Saved the file. Labeled it. Addiction_begins. See, I knew what came next. He'd crave me. Not because of who I was, but because of who he became when he was inside me. And that's the trick. Men like Julian don't fall in love with women. They fall in love with who they think they are when we look at them a certain way. I gave him the mirror, tilted just right. He saw a version of himself that felt powerful, masculine, wanted. But the moment I pulled that mirror away, he'd panic. Because men like him don't know how to survive without the illusion. By 4 a.m., I had the draft email ready. A folder of media assets prepared. A list of journalists who owed me favors and another list of ones who didn't. Yet, I was deciding which outlet would get the exclusive. But I didn't press send. Not yet. Because this isn't just about exposure. It's about timing. I wanted him to squirm. To sweat. To need me. To start making mistakes. To start lying. Then I'd burn him down with his own words. I climbed into bed around 5:15 a.m. No makeup. No tears, just silence. Outside, the city began to wake. Inside, I closed my eyes and dreamed not of fire, but of ashes. Chapter 4, The Addiction Phase. He texted the next morning before the sun even had time to finish rising. Last night wasn't a mistake. Tell me when I can see you again. 7 words. Just 7. But they told me everything I needed to know. He was hooked. I didn't reply. Not immediately. Let him sit in it. Let the silence claw at his skin and infect the quiet in his head. That's how you build obsession. Not with touch, but with absence. He needed to miss me before I gave him more. I brewed my coffee slowly, watching the city breathe through the cracks of my blinds. Outside, everything moved in fast forward. People racing to jobs they hated, relationships built on convenience and delusion. I used to be one of them. Before I stopped lying to myself about what the world really was. My phone buzzed again. I'm in meetings all morning, but I'll be thinking about you. I want to take you away. Somewhere quiet. Just us. Ah, there it was. The fantasy building. The delusion setting in. He was already trying to relocate me. Out of his reality and into his dream. The man with the power wanted to disappear with the problem he couldn't solve. I still didn't answer. Instead, I opened the burner phone I hadn't touched in weeks. It was time to make the first move toward the kill. A quick login. An encrypted message. The target channel. Contact initiated. Hook is in. Phase 2 begins tonight. Collect secondary leverage. Confirm when asset is emotionally compromised. I sent it and powered the phone off. Julian wasn't just a conquest. He was a symbol. And I didn't work alone. I took a long, hot shower and spent the better part of an hour doing something most people never think about anymore, planning intimately. Not just what I'd say or wear, but what I'd allow him to feel and when. Manipulation is a performance art, and I was its most committed actress. Later that afternoon, when his third text came in, a pathetic breadcrumb of emotional need, I responded with 3 words. "You sure about that?" He replied instantly. "I've never been more sure of anything." I rolled my eyes and smiled. God, they're all so predictable. By 6 p.m., I was standing in front of his door again. This time, he opened it in a black tee and slacks. No tie. No jacket. Just desperation. "Hey," he said, breath catching when he saw me. "I didn't think you'd actually come." "You asked," I replied, stepping inside without permission. He followed like a dog who knew better but didn't care. I could smell the cologne he'd used, more than necessary. The apartment looked untouched from the night before, except for the fresh flowers on the counter. Roses. Red, of course. Cliché. Safe. Like he was trying to say something without saying too much. I ran a finger over the petals, then turned to face him. Trying to impress me? Trying to apologize for sounding too eager. You were hard before I even took my coat off yesterday. He flushed. I watched it bloom in his cheeks, embarrassment and arousal tangled together like vines. I stepped toward him, slow and measured. "Do you want to fuck me again, Julian?" He swallowed hard. "Yes." I walked past him, letting my voice trail behind like smoke. "Then sit down and listen first." He blinked, confused. "You want to talk?" "No. You want to talk. I want you to listen." He obeyed. That's how far gone he already was. A man who commands rooms and writes laws was sitting on his own couch, like a student waiting for instruction. I didn't sit next to him. I stood. "I'm not here to play girlfriend," I said. "I'm not here to entertain your midlife fantasy. I'm not like the interns you probably flirt with in elevators. And I'm sure as hell not someone you get to control." "I don't want to control you," he said quickly, defensive. I don't know what this is, but I can't stop thinking about you." "That's not romance, Julian. That's obsession." "An obsession? It comes with a price." He went quiet, stared up at me like he was both terrified and turned on. "I'm not asking you for anything," I continued. "Not yet. But if you want this to continue, you have to understand something very clearly." He waited. "I own you now. Not in the way that shows up on paper or contracts, but in the way that matters most. In your chest. Your gut. Your fucking dick. You think about me when you speak in press conferences. You think about me when your wife kisses your cheek. You touch yourself in the shower and picture my mouth." He looked down, ashamed. "Say it," I demanded. He hesitated. Then, softly, "Yes, I do." "Good," I said, finally sitting beside him. "Then let's get honest." I took his hand. He looked at me like he was drowning in confusion and lust, and something he didn't have words for. "Have you ever told anyone you loved that you don't love them anymore?" He shook his head. ever looked your wife in the face and said, "You don't move me anymore?" "No. Have you ever meant it?" He closed his eyes, jaw tight, then nodded. And just like that, I watched the cracks spread wider. Men think breaking them takes force, but it doesn't. Just permission. One breath of honesty, and the whole illusion collapses. I kissed him again, but slower this time. Tender. Almost gentle. And he whimpered into my mouth like he was the one being seduced now. We moved to the bedroom without a word. I let him take off my dress, piece by piece, like he was unwrapping a secret. But I didn't lose focus. Not even for a second. Because while he was inside me again, gripping my hips like he needed me to exist, I was watching the reflection in the mirror behind his headboard. I saw the exact moment he whispered my name like a vow, and I knew I had him. Afterward, as he lay beside me, his hand resting on my thigh like a claim, he whispered, "I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose you." I rolled over to face him, brushing hair from his face with fingers softer than the truth. "You won't," I said sweetly. "Not if you give me what I need." "What do you need?" he asked. I smiled and kissed his forehead. "I'll let you know when the time's right." Back in my apartment later that night, I opened the second folder on my laptop. The new footage was crystal clear. Higher resolution, better angles, cleaner audio. But more importantly, it was emotional. He looked at me like I was the only thing real in his world, and that, more than any sex tape, was the real weapon. Because once emotion gets involved, that's when they beg, that's when they bleed. And I was just getting started. Chapter 5, Cracks in the Crown. I didn't need to be in the room to know he was unraveling. You can always tell when a man with power starts slipping. The signs are subtle at first, missed calls, late meetings, inconsistent interviews. But then it all begins to snowball. The words get slower, the lies get sloppier, the shadows grow teeth. And that's when you know, you've burrowed beneath their skin and started rewriting the script in their heads. Julian was slipping faster than I expected. By Wednesday, 3 days after our second night together, he called me 6 times. Left 4 voicemails, each one a little more panicked than the last. I didn't answer. I didn't respond. He texted me a photo of the view from his hotel suite. Said he was in town for a conference, but all he could think about was me. "I want you here. I can't sleep. I can't focus. Please." I didn't reply. Because this was the part where desire starts to turn into desperation. Where he starts drowning in the silence and clawing at the edges of his composure like a man trapped under glass. Men like Julian don't know how to wait. Their whole lives have been a series of people bending to their time, their rules, their schedule. So when they're ignored, they rot. I was halfway through a book I didn't care about and sipping wine I didn't need when his name lit up my phone again. I watched it ring, watched it stop, and then it started again. I answered on the 7th ring. "Hello." Silence. Then his breath. "You answered." "I had time." His voice cracked on the other end. Not loud. Not pathetic. Just worn down. Like he'd been pacing holes into hotel carpet, rehearsing this moment in his head. I thought I fucked everything up. "No, Julian," I said softly. "You just got a little ahead of yourself. I need to see you. I'm sure you do. Tonight." "No. Why not?" I paused. Let the silence drag just long enough to make him nervous. Then I spoke slowly. "Because tonight I want you to sit in it." "In what?" "In the truth. In what this is. In who you've become since you met me." He exhaled, long and shaky. "I don't recognize myself anymore." "Good." That was the point. He didn't know that I'd already booked the room next to his at the hotel. Had a direct line of sight, through a vent, I paid a janitor $500 to crack open just enough. I'd watched him for an hour earlier. Staring at his phone, scrolling through our texts, rewinding the video of our night together. Yes, the video. I had sent it to him, privately encrypted, with a note. "Your truth in motion. Don't worry, I'm the only one who has it. For now." I knew what that would do. I knew it would rip him open, give him a thrill, then plant the seed of terror. The idea that something so intimate, so career-ending, could exist outside his control? That was the poison. It would infect every thought until he couldn't tell if the thing he wanted most was the same thing that would destroy him. He begged me to come, said he needed to see me, just to talk, just to hold me. And eventually I gave him what he wanted. At exactly 1:03 a.m., I walked into the lobby wearing a silk trench coat and nothing underneath, but a black lace bodysuit and confidence forged in fire. The concierge looked up and smiled nervously. Men like him could sense it too, that I didn't belong to anyone. That I wasn't following anyone's rules. room 1912. I knocked once. He opened the door like he'd been standing there for hours. And maybe he had. His eyes drank me in, hungry, wounded, relieved. His shirt was unbuttoned, and his tie hung limp around his neck. There were two glasses of untouched scotch on the table, and a playlist of jazz playing so low it was almost a heartbeat. "You came," he whispered. "I always do." We didn't speak for the first few minutes. He just sat on the edge of the bed, hands in his lap, staring at the carpet like a man in confession. "I've never felt this out of control before," he said finally. "It's like I'm not even me anymore." "That's because the version of you that existed before me was a fucking lie," I said, crossing my legs slowly. "You've been pretending for so long, you thought the mask was your face." He looked up at me, eyes glassy. "And you're the real thing?" "No," I said softly. "I'm the mirror." His breath caught. "What do you want from me?" he asked. I stood, walked to him, and leaned in close enough to feel his pulse pounding in his throat. "I want you to need me so badly that you forget your wife's name," I whispered. "I want you to lie to your team, cancel meetings, leave bills unsigned, miss votes. I want the world to watch you unravel. And when they ask why, I want the answer to be my name." He swallowed hard. "You already have that. Then give me more. What else is there?" "Access," I said. "Give me your personal phone. Give me your laptop. Let me into your world." He hesitated. "Just a flicker. That's how you know you're touching something sacred. The pause." Then, he reached over, grabbed his phone, and handed it to me. Passcode already unlocked. Laptop's in the case. Passwords, Larkspur 91. It's my mother's favorite flower. I kissed his cheek. "You're doing great, Julian." He didn't know this, but I'd already cloned his phone 3 days ago. The laptop was just a bonus. A courtesy. I needed the performance more than the data. It's important they think they're choosing to surrender. I spent the rest of the night with him. Not for pleasure. For power. Every time he moaned my name, it stitched another thread into the noose. Every time he held me like I was salvation, I whispered things into his ear I knew would haunt him in daylight. By dawn, he was asleep, tangled in sheets and lies. And I was at the edge of the bed, scrolling through his email drafts, downloading attachments, forwarding select messages to an encrypted folder labeled Final Strike. I found one message addressed to his wife. "Unsent. Subject. We need to talk. Body. There's something I have to tell you. I didn't plan for this. I didn't expect it. But I can't live this lie anymore. I met someone, and it's more than just sex." I smiled. His guilt was fermenting. Soon it would explode. And when it did, I'd be ready. Not just to destroy him, but to watch. Chapter 6. A controlled collapse. Power doesn't scream when it dies. It whimpers. It gasps. It drowns quietly, beneath the surface, while everyone else is still applauding the illusion. Julian was drowning, and no one could hear him. The headlines hadn't dropped, yet. The videos were still locked in their little digital cages, guarded by passwords and firewalls, and a will stronger than vengeance. I didn't need to press play to destroy him. Not yet. No, I was watching something far more delicious unfold. He was doing it to himself. The man who once gave speeches about moral clarity now flinched at his own reflection. The man who once controlled entire voting blocks couldn't keep his hands from shaking when I whispered, "You belong to me now." And he did. Every part of him, his thoughts, his breath, his guilt, revolved around me. I didn't have to chase him. He came to me like a fucking offering. Raw. Wrecked. Addicted. My silence was enough to break him in half. But I didn't stay silent forever. Because the best way to finish a hunt is to let the prey believe they've escaped. Monday, 7:46 a.m. I sent the photo. Just one. Me in his office chair. Wearing nothing but his tie. Legs crossed. Smiling like I knew his schedule better than he did. No caption. No location tag. Just the image. It took him 11 minutes to respond. "Where are you?" "Jesus. Did you go to the office? What are you doing? That chair still smells like you." I replied. "You can't be there. If anyone saw." "No one saw. Are you sure? Are you nervous?" "I'm terrified." I could practically hear his breath stuttering through the text. His panic wasn't even masked anymore. He was unraveling in real time. And I hadn't even pressed record. Not on that day. But I had pressed something. I'd placed a wireless mic under the armrest. A pen recorder in the drawer. I'd left behind nothing but whispers and data. No trace but evidence. Because Julian's office wasn't just where he worked. It was where he lied. I found memos about campaign funding. Contracts with names scratched out. donations that smelled like favors disguised as philanthropy, and emails, so many emails, between him and people he publicly condemned. He wasn't just a cheater. He was a fucking hypocrite. I watched him give a press conference that afternoon. He stood behind a podium, suit immaculate, voice strong, jaw set like granite, talking about family values, about the erosion of moral decency in modern America. I watched from bed, naked, one leg draped lazily over the sheets, sipping iced tea. "You have no idea what's coming," I whispered to the screen. He looked straight into the camera at that moment, and for a second, just a second, his eyes flickered. Like maybe he felt me, watching, breathing, waiting. That night, I didn't go to him. He came to me, unannounced, wild-eyed, shirt wrinkled, tie missing, hair disheveled like he'd run his hands through it 20 times on the drive over. I opened the door and leaned against the frame. "You look like shit," I said. He laughed, bitter, broken. "I think I'm losing my fucking mind." "You are." He pushed past me, pacing my living room like a man pacing a cell. "I can't sleep. I keep thinking someone knows. I look at my wife and all I see is guilt. I get these flashes like people are watching me. Do you have any idea what that's like?" I sat on the arm of the couch, one eyebrow raised. "Yes, actually, I do." He stopped, stared. "What is this?" he asked, voice quiet. "What are you doing to me?" "I'm making you honest." "By fucking ruining me?" "No, Julian. By stripping you down to who you really are." He fell to his knees. Just like that. Right there on my floor. A senator. A husband. A father. Reduced to a kneeling mess. His forehead pressed to my thigh. "Please," he whispered. "I'll do anything. Just don't let this destroy everything." I tilted his chin up until he was looking me in the eye. "You already destroyed everything. I'm just giving it a spotlight. I love you." I almost laughed, but I didn't, because that right there, that wasn't love. That was desperation wearing a mask called obsession. "You love how I make you feel," I said. "You love the way I let you fall apart without judgment. But you don't love me, Julian. You don't even know me. I want to start over. Clean. Just me and you." "You mean leave your wife? Step down? Admit everything to the public?" "If I have to." "Oh, honey," I said, running my fingers through his hair. "You're already fucked. You just don't know it yet." He didn't sleep that night. He just lay there, eyes open, staring at the ceiling while I watched him from the shadows of my sheets. By morning, his team had called him 14 times. His chief of staff. His media advisor. His wife. He didn't answer any of them. When he finally got dressed, I handed him a USB drive. "What's this?" he asked. "Something to think about." He stared at it, then at me. "You trust me with this?" I smiled. "No, baby. I trust me with it. I trust that if you try to run or lie or backpedal, I'll hit send. And the world will watch the real you come out on camera." He didn't speak, just nodded, and walked out like a condemned man who hadn't yet realized the execution was going to be public. That afternoon, I sat at a cafe just two blocks from the Capitol building. Laptop open, burner phone charged, earbuds in, a list of journalists highlighted in red, and the video cleaned, clipped, edited for maximum impact, loaded into a private file titled "The Fall of Julian Cross." I hovered over the send button, paused, breathed. This wasn't just revenge anymore. This was justice. This was the ghost of my mother finally screaming through me. And yet, I didn't press it. Not yet. Because the best part of the game is the moment right before checkmate, when they still think they have one more move. And you just sit there, smiling. Chapter 7, The Detonation. You ever watch a man break in real time? Not scream, not cry, but break, slowly, silently, from the inside out. Like the spine of a book snapping under pressure it was never designed to carry. I watched it. I orchestrated it. And when it happened, I didn't flinch. Because by the time Julian Cross realized his crown was made of paper and lies, the match was already lit, and the flames were licking at his ankles. It all began with the press conference. A last-minute event, hastily put together by his team. He called it a matter of transparency. I was impressed. He was trying to get ahead of the fire, trying to hold the narrative in his hands and shape it before it exploded in his face. But what he didn't know, what he couldn't have known, was that the explosion wasn't coming from the outside. I was the explosion, and I was already inside the house. He stepped up to the podium like a man preparing to be reborn. Charcoal gray suit, blue tie, wedding band gleaming. Sweat threatening to undo the layers of foundation powdered onto his face. Cameras clicked. Flashbulbs popped. Silence. He cleared his throat. I want to begin today by addressing rumors. I pressed play. Backstage, in a shadowed control room two floors above the ballroom, the audio began to broadcast. Harder, his voice breathless. Fuck yes right there. Oh my god, don't stop. The media room froze. Technicians turned. Julian's jaw snapped shut. His eyes widened. He looked directly into the crowd. Right into the abyss. Then the video hit the screen. The sex tape. Not all of it. Just enough. The sounds. The gasps. My name. The flash of his wedding band as he gripped my thigh. The camera panned, perfectly centered, high resolution. Lit by moonlight and shame. And then, black screen. Silence. Except for the slow rise of murmurs. Phones came out. Reporters stood. Julian's mouth opened, then closed again. And I stood backstage in the dark, invisible but present, arms crossed, heart calm. This wasn't revenge. This was the final act of an opera soaked in sweat, deceit, and divine fucking justice. He stumbled off the stage. His team swarmed him like bees around a dead queen. I could hear shouting, muffled swears, phones ringing. Some of them were already backing away, distancing themselves. Rats leaving a ship that hadn't even started sinking yet, but already smelled like salt and blood. I left the building before he saw me, because I wanted the last face he saw to be his own, broadcast across news outlets, social media, and political blogs. By the time I got home, it was everywhere. Hashtag #ScandalofCross. Hashtag #PoliticsAnpassy. Hashtag #ThiefAll. Twitter was eating him alive. Reddit threads were dissecting the audio. Instagram had freeze frames of his face the moment the screen behind him lit up with his own humiliation. The media didn't have to do much. The story wrote itself. A married senator known for his rigid conservative values caught in a sex scandal with an unidentified woman, one who was clearly recording without his knowledge. They speculated who I was. Some said I was a sex worker. Others said I was a staffer. Some thought I was planted by the opposition party. One theory claimed I was a foreign agent sent to dismantle American democracy, one fuck at a time. I didn't correct them. Let them guess. Let them wonder. That was the beauty of it. I was the ghost in the machine. The whisper behind the scream. The woman he destroyed himself for, who never even gave him a real name. By the next morning, his wife had issued a statement. My husband's actions have deeply hurt our family. I ask for privacy as we begin the painful process of healing. Translation, I'm done. Don't call me. He went into hiding. A private facility, they said, for stress recovery. They made it sound noble. Medical. Harmless. But we both knew better. He was shattered. Shame isn't loud. It creeps. It seeps. It poisons the cracks in your soul and makes you watch as everything you've built comes down around you. And then he called me. Blocked number. Midday. I answered. Hello, Julian. Silence. Then a breath. A shallow, broken thing. You ruined me. No, Julian. You did that. I just handed you the mirror. I loved you. No, you loved the fantasy I let you believe in. I was never yours. I was your reckoning. You could have walked away. I could have. So could you. But neither of us are saints. He was crying. Softly. A man alone in the wreckage of his legacy. And in that moment, I didn't feel triumphant. I felt done. Like a war had ended. And the battlefield was silent now. No winners. No medals. Just scorched earth. You said this wasn't about revenge, he whispered. It wasn't, I said. It was about balance. My mother died because men like you think the rules don't apply to them. You live above it all, untouched, invincible. But not anymore. Now the world sees you for who you really are. He didn't respond. Goodbye, Julian, I said gently. Click. I blocked the number. Closed the chapter. Burned the backups. Because I didn't need to keep the evidence. The world had already seen enough. His downfall was immortal now. Embedded into the internet like digital sin. I stood on my balcony that evening, glass of wine in hand, wind teasing the hem of my robe. The city below kept moving. Horns honking. Sirens humming. Life unchanged for most. But not for me. And not for him. He would spend the rest of his life wondering what hit him. Searching for me in every mistake. Hearing my voice in every silence. And me. I'd move on. To the next target. Because there's always another man who thinks he's untouchable. And I'm the reminder. The lesson. The fire in their fucking ruin.